Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Joining me, as always, on the board, Mr. Sean Cloud.
Reno.
Oh, very nice.
Right? I was thinking about that.
That was awesome. Very nice. I don't know about you, Sean, and anybody else out there listening, but I woke up yesterday morning like it was freaking Christmas Day.
Did you?
I mean, there's probably no other better feeling in sports on a yearly calendar than the first day of the traditional NCAA tournament. Because obviously you have the first four games on Tuesday and Wednesday, but there's nothing like that first Thursday of the NCAA tournament. Really the first 2 days. Yesterday and today are a lot of fun because it's literally just games on top of games. And I mean, I'm watching Oregon-Wisconsin right now. What do you have over there?
I have all three of the games that are going right now, technically.
There you go. Colgate and Tennessee just wrapped up. Tennessee won 77-70, which sweeps the board for the two seeds this year, all four advancing to the second round. Currently, number one Virginia, who was trailing to number 16 Gardner-Webb at the half, looked like it could possibly be another 16-1 upset for the second year in a row, featuring Virginia as the one seed. But they've essentially got it together. It's now 69-50. Virginia leads just under 4 minutes to go in that one. And then Buffalo leading Arizona State 44-31. That nearing the end of the first half. And currently Oregon leads Wisconsin 13-11.
I have 15-11 now.
Oh, 15-11. So Oregon is about to score on my screen. Either way.
Sorry to tease it early.
Jeez, man, you spoiled it for me. But no, I know it might be a little sour to hear us talk about the NCAA tournament based on the unfortunate events of yesterday, with Nevada being knocked out by Florida in the first round. Tough draw, though. Not to make excuses for the Wolfpack by any means, because we know that's not the way they would want to operate. But tough draw to get an SEC team like Florida in the first round. But definitely a winnable game for Nevada. To sit here and say that they had no chance would be ridiculous, or that going into it, it was a mismatch is ridiculous. Nevada had every chance to win that game yesterday. They just came out of the gate, like, you know, with two left feet almost.
Yeah, super slow out of the gate. It's the one thing we've been saying all year is not to come out slow in the start of the games, and that's what you do when you go down 19 points, I think was the total amount of points that you were down.
I mean, somewhere from 15 to 19. It was somewhere in that range was the most they were down.
Yeah, and the one thing I really saw that I didn't like was that there wasn't any good offensive rebounding on our team, really. I mean, anytime the ball went up, you could kind of just see Nevada already starting to go back to the other side because they knew that Florida State would get the ball back. That's just kind of the mentality that I was seeing with all the guys there. What did you think?
Yeah, I think there was energy in the first half, but it was just like it was all over the place. It wasn't like they were working as one cohesive unit. I think the turnovers that they had in the first half was telling of that. You had like five guys out there and two guys were on one page, and two guys were on another. One guy didn't exactly, I mean, that's just kind of how it felt. And I'll be honest and say that at halftime though, I wasn't too worried that they were going to stay down for that long. I figured they were going to make a run. I didn't know if it was going to be enough to take the lead or if it was going to be just to close it back to within 3 or 5 points, which is what they did. But I felt like a run was coming, but you can't really rely on that. I feel like throughout, really more at the start of this season, it was almost like a runner in the race who kind of hangs back the first, like, you know, let's say it's a mile. They hang back about the first almost three laps, and then with about 450 meters, they just take off, and they pass everybody. But sooner or later, there's going to be somebody that's too far out ahead of you for you to reel them all the way in. And I feel like that's what kind of happened yesterday. Nevada's been out of these games before and been in these situations before this season, but they've been able to sprint back with defense and just electrify, and most of the time hitting threes too. That was another big issue. It didn't seem like they could get a three to fall in that first half.
I mean, they were 5 of 24 the whole game. Jazz Johnson only got 3 points, which was from his lone three ball that he had. So that doesn't help, you're right. And I mean, it wasn't even as if Florida State was any better. They were only They were only 5 of 18. So it wasn't like it was a big difference, but
that's true.
You know, they had more from field goals, 24 of 53 versus our 19 of 55. that's where it looks like it really killed. Even with free throws, we were still neck and neck with them.
And you and I have talked about that this season. Smudio Margulies over at Sports Insiders has talked about this season. John Ramey has talked about that this season. There have been points where this team relies a little too much on threes. I think in the first half, they started to get down by a fair amount, and they said, okay, we can get back in this if we make threes, and they just weren't falling. And they were able to make that run where they were making some big shots there, and you kind of saw the difference it could make. But again, when you don't have enough time and you end up going colder again, they went cold in like the last two or so minutes of that game again. So it was an unfortunate situation. It's an unfortunate way to see that team end this season. But I don't want this loss or the loss to San Diego State to ruin what they were able to accomplish this year. Because yes, that's a bummer way to end the season. But if you look at the 29 wins, that's tied for most in school history. I think you said, Sean, they've done that two other times in their program's history.
Yeah, they did it last year, and then they did it back in 2007, I believe, is what I read.
So to celebrate the fact that this team was 15-0 at home. 15 teams came to Lawler Events Center to try and win, and none of them succeeded. That's something to be proud of. To be proud of the way they packed that arena this season and, you know, the energy they put into this city this year. There's a lot to be proud of, and I just hope that the way this season ends doesn't take any of that pride away, because regardless of who you are and the teams you play, to only lose four games an entire regular season is really, really impressive. If I could curse, I would, because it is bleeping impressive to do that regardless of who you play. So I mean hats off to Coach Mutz, hats off to this team, and you know, I promise you Musselman's going to have this team ready wearing to go next year, without these seniors on the team.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what our team looks like next year without our seniors, without the twins.
I feel like it's going to be the true coming out party for Jordan Brown.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's gotten this season. I think they played it really good with him this season. They didn't put him on the floor a lot in the beginning of the season, gave him maybe 10 or so minutes, and then it's kind of just gradually built. But he got time under a solid senior class. I feel like next year he's going to really get the chance to emerge as that big star. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, the women's team, I didn't hear them make a tournament. I didn't see nothing got passed down to us for broadcasting. So unfortunate for them not to be able to make a postseason competition. But still a great year. Jade Redmond led the way, really had a really nice senior year. A couple of other seniors on that team had a really nice showing as well. But got to continue to move on, because it is all about baseball now.
Finally.
For what we're broadcasting. But, you know, obviously a lot of other sports going on as well in Nevada. In fact, let's talk about some of those sports. Let's give you a little update to Rue. Should get a little jingle from it. That's what we're going to call it, the update to Rue.
Yeah, we'll get a jingle for that.
The men's golf team back in action this Monday and Tuesday. They'll be in Eugene, Oregon for a competition known simply as the Duck. How about that? And speaking of Oregon, they are now currently trailing Wisconsin 19-18 with about just under 7 minutes to go. I just can't stop talking about it. I'm so excited. But that's what the men's team will be doing. The women's golf team placed 11th out of 12 teams at the Meadow Club Collegiate in Fairfax, California. Victoria Gailey led the way with a score of 10 over, followed by Catlin Cullum and Katie Rutherford, who are 12 and 13 over, respectively. Team is off, however, this weekend. The men's tennis team yesterday lost to Fresno State 4-3, dropping the doubles competition 2-1, and then splitting the singles portion of the match. Nevada now 6-3 on the season and will play Cal Poly next today, and then Cal on Sunday. So there you go. A lot of stuff going on there. Fun stuff, right, Sean?
Oh, yeah. Always entertaining. Always.
The women's tennis team went 1-2 last weekend, first beating UC Santa Cruz 6-1, and they unfortunately dropped their last two matches, first to San Francisco 3-4, and to the University of the Pacific 4-0. This weekend, though, the women's tennis team is back in action against Cal State Northridge today, and then on Saturday against Cal Poly. The track and field team opened up their outdoor schedule last weekend in Sacramento for the Hornet Invitational, which is a pretty aggressive name. I mean, it's their statement, it's their mascot, but the Hornet Invitational, it's like, you know, bring your A game.
Yeah, don't mess up now.
Man, don't
You'll
screw
get,
up, man.
Get stung early.
Yeah. Are Hornets, are they like wasps? Can they sting you a numerous amount of times, or are they like bees where it's one and done?
I have no idea.
Oh, man. Questions that just pop up when you're reading about pack sports.
Animal questions.
You never know.
Biology.
But they had Nevada had three runners in the top 20 in the 800-meter race, featuring two freshmen, Michaela Stashen and Kalia. I'm going to mess up this last name. I don't know if the P is silent. I'm guessing it is. Kalia Pfeffer. Really, really sorry if I mispronounced that.
I'm
going to
say that's the best.
Or if it's a dirty slang word, I don't know about that either. Could be. It's kind of sounded like it. But we're not going to put those thoughts in anybody's head.
No.
And then Nicola Adder, fresh off her indoor national championship, returned to the high jump where she won the event with a jump just under 6 feet. Next weekend, Nevada will be in San Diego for the Aztec Invitational. And then Nevada's lone representative will be at the swimming and diving championships, Isabel Vasquez, which started Wednesday, actually, and will conclude tomorrow in Austin, Texas. And then talked about baseball. They had an exciting comeback win on Tuesday against St. Mary's, trailing 5-4, entering the bottom of the ninth inning. Jalen McLaughlin hit an RBI to score his teammate Marco Valenzuela to tie the game. And then an error at third allowed Jalen to come in and score the walk-off game-winning run. Really, really exciting to hear the last little bit of that game. Nevada won it 6-5. They're now 11-8 on the season. They will visit rivals UNLV this weekend for a three-game series today through Sunday on our sister station 94.1 FM. And the softball team continues to roll. They are playing really, really well at the start of the season, beating Utah State 2-1, dropping the first game 4-5, and then rebounding with a 6-4 win and an 11-2 win in six innings. Then they swept a doubleheader against Marist College, first 8-2, then 4-2. They dropped the first game against Montana yesterday 4-5, but the final two games of that series are today and tomorrow. So a lot going on in Pac Sports, even though basketball season is over. Don't lose touch with Nevada, folks. Still a lot going on out there. Remember to support the Pac. And speaking of local sports, when we come back, we'll talk a little 1868 FC. And we'll also have a little giveaway for a certain indoor football team starting here in Reno. And we'll have Emily Jansen, the new GM of the Reno Aces, in studio with us for a quick chat. That's coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the program. Oregon, Wisconsin, now currently tied at 23, just under 4 minutes to go there. Buffalo and Arizona State at the half, and it's 44-31. Buffalo, Sean is not happy with that at all. It's your alma mater, man.
Yeah, it's my alma mater, and they're not doing well. I just thought they'd do better.
Yeah. Virginia has a final on Gardner Webb, 71-56. So although Virginia was almost falling back into that trap of being the number one seed losing to the 16, they survived to win by 15. So they shook off that very, very slow start. But I'll tell you what, I was at my house on my couch and I saw the 26-14 score pop up with like 8 minutes to go in the first half. And I popped up off my buttocks. I was like, no way is that going to happen again. It can't happen 2 years in a row to this same team. Can you imagine how upsetting it would be to Virginia fans if for 2 years in a row they are the only number one seed to lose to a 16? That would be so depressing.
Yeah, Spencer community is like, they're winning. And then when we started, they're like, they didn't win.
Oh, man. All right. But let's talk about a team that did just get their first win of the season. That is Reno 1868 FC. Opened up their season with a tough draw to Orange County SC 2-2 with a late penalty kick added, which allowed Orange County to tie the game. But Reno then hosted Austin Bold FC, which is a brand new team to the USL, last Saturday and picked up a 2-1 win. Here at home, they went down early. It was 1-0 Austin in the 14th minute. They took that lead to halftime. But then a man we talked about all of last year, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Brian Brown, is back in action, scoring both of Reno's goals in the second half. First one came right after halftime in the 46th minute, off an assist by Raul Mendoloa. And that took the game to a tie at 1-1. And in the 78th minute, Brian Brown took an assist off of Brent Richards to put Reno up 2-1, and they would hold that score all the way to the end. Great bounce-back win from Reno, especially against a team that you're playing for the first time. I talked to both Coach Ian Russell and midfielder Sam Gleedel about that over the last couple weeks, about how tough that is, especially early in the season. But they handled it well. I feel like you kind of saw that with an early goal in the 14th minute. probably got them a little off guard because they didn't know who this team was. But they adjusted well in the second half. And, of course, when you have Brian Brown on the pitch, anything's possible out there. But not the only team in Reno getting ready to play. Because as the Bighorns have made their way out, and we hope they had the best of luck in Stockton, the Reno Express, the indoor football league, will be starting their season tomorrow night at 7 o'clock here in Reno at the Reno Events Center, taking on the Tri-Cities Fire out of Washington. So interesting, we'll see how that goes. And we might just have a pair of tickets to give away here in a couple minutes. Ooh, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. But also another team getting ready to get going are the Reno Aces. We're still a couple weeks away from the start of their season, but we are super, super happy to have their new general manager, Emily Jansen, in with us. And Emily, first off, thank you for coming by. I really appreciate you taking some time. And I know you're joining us from the Houston Astros organization. So just kind of curious what the biggest change is coming from Houston and going to Reno.
I did. So this is my return to Reno, which is awesome. I grew up in Chicago, but had the good fortune of living here for 4 years before spending two in Houston. And honestly, despite the snowy winter, the weather, the mountains, the outdoors, the good folks at Greater Nevada Field, it's been awesome return.
Growing up in Chicago, did you become a Cubs or White Sox fan? Have you kind of distanced yourself from both franchises?
Yeah, so I had a tough weekend. I was down at spring training. I know, tough. But the D-backs played the Cubs on Saturday. And
gotcha.
I am a Cubs fan since I was a little girl watching them on WGN.
Okay.
It was one of the only stations we could get in my house growing up. So that Cubs affinity runs deep, but so does that D-backs love now seeing so many guys come through Reno and have the fortune of watching their careers take off right here in Northern Nevada.
Yeah, that is really cool. Now let's talk about a big thing coming up this year. Reno will be donning the name Los Corazones, and I hope I don't butcher that too much. But how did the idea of this come about? How did it all start?
Sure. So as part of Minor League Baseball's initiative celebrating Hispanic heritage and culture, the Reno Aces will play as Los Corazones de Reno for four games during the upcoming 2019 season. So we're joining 72 Minor League Baseball clubs across the country in what we call Copa. Copa es divertido, so the fun cup, where we will take on this new brand in partnership with New Era and have amazing gear and lots of fun celebrating Hispanic heritage. It's really a campaign designed to embrace the entire culture, not just here in Northern Nevada, but across the entire country.
And are there going to be any other promotions running along those nights, the four nights that they do take on that persona? Is there anything else that'll be available for the fans?
Yeah, so great music, entertainment, of course, professional baseball, food, beer, street tacos, margaritas, micheladas, lots of fun to be had down at Greater Nevada Field.
And speaking of the team, Jimmy Scherfe and Joey Crable were both optioned back to Reno at the end of last week. What's it mean to get those two guys back on the roster?
Yeah, you know, it's it always feels a little bit bittersweet. I'm thrilled to have them back on our roster. Such great players and also great people to have here in Reno. But I also, the other part of me, can't wait for them to get the permanent call up and fulfill their dream with the D-backs.
And Reno gets to start their season against Fresno, a big rivalry for the Aces. What's that rivalry mean to this team, to minor league baseball, and to the fans here in Reno?
Yeah, sure. So I think we're always in rivalry with our neighbors across the state line. So between Fresno and Sacramento, it would be great to start out with a win. I think we've got a really great opportunity this year with our new manager, Chris Crone. You're going to see a lot of passion coming from him. Anyone who remembers the Phil Nevin days, you're going to see a similar type persona on the field. He spent 35 years in baseball and brings a lot of that energy, passion. Three of our four coaches were hitting coaches, so we're going to see hopefully a lot of balls sail out of Greater Nevada Field.
Well, Emily, thank you very much for stopping by. We really appreciate it. We can't wait to see all the fun to have happen this year in Reno.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
That's going to be a really fun promotional night, too, when they dress up and get those new uniforms on those four games. That's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, Emily, for telling us about that. And I also got the chance to sit down with our partners over at PropSwap, Mr. Ian Epstein, one of the co-founders, and talk to him about some opportunities through PropSwap for this weekend. He joined me over the phone, and this is how it sounded. Joining me on the phone once again, co-founder of PropSwap, Mr. Ian Epstein. Ian, thank you very much for joining me, man. I know it's a busy time of year for you guys. But first, I got to know, did you fill out a bracket? And if so, how is it going through the first day of the tournament?
I did fill out a bracket. I had some good winners. Murray State and Wofford were a couple good picks, although I did slip up on Nevada, which I think a lot of people did. And, you know, I think it's actually a good segue into PropSwap because Nevada, UNR, was a team that I think a lot of people expected to do well before the season, had a bumpy regular season. But we actually saw a lot of people sell their Nevada tickets at a loss, actually, before that game. And they were able to get some money back for their tickets on PropSwap. PropSwap makes a lot of sense. When long shots become favorites to sell in PropSwap, but it's also a way for people to kind of get something back for their tickets if they've lost confidence in their teams.
And talking about long shots, you talked about number 12 Murray State advancing, number 10 Minnesota, and number 10 Florida, of course, upsetting Nevada. But what's the smartest way to bet a double-digit seed as they kind of make their way through the tournament? Is it better to kind of take a different approach each round or keep it kind of consistent the more they work through the tournament? What would be the smartest way to approach that?
Right. I think there's two ways you can look at it. So, you know, for example, last year we had a guy, he bet $10 on Loyola to win the championship before the tournament started. And then four games later, before their Final Four game, he sold that ticket for $1,000, right? So Teams don't need to win the championship in order to make money. You know, that ticket, you know, would have won $10,000 if Loyola won, but guess what? They lost. And so it was worth zero. But that seller was able to turn $10 into $1,000. So taking those long shots at very long odds is one way to make money off them. If you're looking for something a little shorter, I would also suggest taking teams to win their region, which requires four wins instead of six wins. And then if you can end up selling those down the road as well. We saw a guy who bet Murray State to win the region at 60-1, and then he sold it on PropSwap after one win at 15-1. Because people, when a team like Murray State comes out and wins by 20 against Marquette, people love that and they get very reactionary. And so they'll go to PropSwap to say, hey, you know, are there any Murray State props out there? And sellers can make a lot of money that way.
And it's all about trying to find that next Loyola Chicago and make that money this year. And one way to possibly do that is look at the first four teams, because there's always one first four team that has a fair amount of success and reaches the second weekend. Two of them have been eliminated already, and one plays Duke later. So that leaves Arizona State as kind of the only option on that road. Is it smart to take them to the Sweet 16?
You know, I agree with you. Every year it does seem like there's one of those teams at least gets one win. But if I was looking for like an interesting long shot, I would actually look towards Oregon, kind of in the same conference. But Oregon was a team that would not have made the tournament had they not won their conference tournament. They were a very well respected before the season, had a very bad regular season, but they're playing their best basketball right now. So if you're looking for a team with some pedigree that's not like a small school, I would look towards Oregon, who's got a lot of talent, really good coaching. They play a Wisconsin team that really has a tough time scoring the basketball. They were as long as 1,000-1 a couple weeks ago, and Now they're 300-1. That's a team that I would look at long odds to maybe possibly make a run.
And we talk about long shots a lot, but let's talk about a favorite for a quick second, because I think with a healthy Zion, Duke is the favorite. But if you were to say, look to this team besides Duke that you might want to put your money on to win the tournament, who would that be?
That's a good question. Yeah, I would look towards Virginia. Last year, Virginia had an embarrassing showing, being the first number one seed, losing to a number 16 seed. And in my opinion, this year, that's going to really serve them well because they will not overlook anyone. Obviously, I think they're going to come out and smack whoever they play in the first round. But I think moving on, they're a team on a mission. They need to redeem themselves off of last year. You know, the knock on Virginia usually is really good defense, bad offense. But this is one of the best offensive teams Tony Bennett's had in a long time. They shoot the three ball really well. And so I'm looking at Virginia to possibly win the championship.
And Ian, one more question before I let you go, and this doesn't have to be March Madness related, but if you were to make a suggestion on a bet or a possible swap opportunity to look for this weekend, what would that be?
Yeah, obviously, I'm going to point to March Madness. Like I said, I like Oregon. Another way to utilize PropSwap is with parlays as well. We had a bunch of customers who made parlays with teams starting on Thursday that rolled into Friday, and now with, you know, one or two games left, they can sell those for a profit on PropSwap as well. So it doesn't just have to be futures, it could be parlays as well. But if I had to pick one long shot to put my money on, I'm going with Oregon, either to win the region or to win the championship.
Was a former Duck. I love hearing that. But Ian, thank you very much for your time, man. Always appreciate it and look forward to talking to you again next weekend and all the madness to come.
All right. Thank you, Spencer. Talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure to talk to Ian Epstein, one of the co-founders of PropSwap. And, of course, we'll have him back on the show next week when we got the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 going on. But like I said, Reno, indoor football, getting started and shot. We got something for the people.
We do have something for the people, and we have a pair of tickets to see the Reno Express versus the Tri-Cities Fire Pro Indoor Football at the Reno Event Center tomorrow, March 23rd, plus lunch for two from Porta Subs.
Woo! What a deal. That goes to caller number 9 right now at 775-333-0945. We'll dive into March Madness fully after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. All right, time to dive into March Madness because we are full-blown in the tournament. We have two games going on right now. Oregon and Wisconsin deadlocked at 25 going into the half, which is the final, fighting for the final second-round spot in the South region. We know three of the second-round matchups in that bracket. Number 1, Virginia will take on number 9, Oklahoma. Number 3, Purdue will take on number 6, Villanova. And number 2, Tennessee will take on number 10, Iowa. And then the winner of Wisconsin and Oregon will play the 13th seed, UC Irvine.
Who?
Sean?
Fun fact, this was their first ever in program history to win an NCAA game.
Wow. And what a game to win when you're a 13th seed and you topple a 4 seed. Let me ask you this, Sean. Where do you draw the upset line when it comes to a lower seed team beating an upper seed? Like, what do you say is not an upset?
Anything below 10 and anything above 5. So if it's like the, you know, 10th seed going against like the 7th seed, I wouldn't say that's an upset.
Okay.
But if it's like the 14th seed going against something below the top 5 seeds,
yeah,
that'd be an upset.
I agree with that. I would think 9 over 8 and 10 over 7, not really upsets.
No.
And we're not just saying that because Florida beat Nevada. We're not just saying it because of that and that being a 10 over 7. Really, I mean, 9 and 8 is the closest matchup, and 7 versus 10 would be the next closest. So I agree. I don't necessarily think that's really an upset, especially when you realize that only one 7th seed won their first round matchup, and that was number 7, Wofford, however you say it. I think it's Wofford.
Either way, one of those two.
Number 7,
it's not
Wofford.
Waffle.
Yeah, it's not Waffle. Those do sound kind of good right now. Wofford beat Seton Hall, and that was the only number 7 to get a win. Number 10, Iowa beat number 7, Cincy. Minnesota beat number 7, Louisville. And then, of course, as we've mentioned, Florida over Nevada. So I don't think I agree. I don't think that's really an upset. And I was talking to Sean, too, about this after before it went on the air. What is more impressive? Because this year and last year, I really enjoy doing round by round versus a traditional all the way through bracket, because round by round allows me to really enjoy the tournament. Because had Gardner Webb upset number 1 Virginia, instead of my bracket pretty much in the South being busted because I have Virginia going all the way to the Elite 8 before losing to Tennessee in the traditional bracket I filled out, which there's a picture of it on the Spencer Wilson Show page at sportsreno.com if you want to compare picks and whatnot. So instead of my bracket then being busted, I could be like, well, I picked Virginia, but they lost. Now I might take a chance on Gardner Webb beating number 9 Oklahoma. So they just toppled the number 2 team in the tournament. Obviously, that didn't happen. Don't freak out if you're just tuning in. Virginia won. But that's why I like round by round. I did, however, fill out a traditional bracket. But I've gotten into that more and more. So I was asking Sean, is it as impressive to go perfect round by round as it is going traditionally, picking it all the way through the tournament? And we both agreed that it's not as impressive. It would still be impressive because you still have to pick every game correctly, but it wouldn't be as impressive as laying the whole thing down before Thursday game started and just not touching your bracket after that.
Right, like I was telling you before we came on the air, was if if it was something everyone talked about by going round by round, it'd be that'd be really impressive, right? And it's still in our minds is impressive. But that's not what everyone talks about. Everyone talks about the perfect bracket, the perfect everything, and that's what everyone's talking about, you know, the 16% chance of any of it, the 1 in 22 chance of you even getting a perfect anything in it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what makes it more impressive if that is the fact that you can pick it. Now, if you – my whole thing that makes it impressive for me specifically because I've never won anything in terms of March Madness and anything, but if you at least get one game right in terms of what you're picking – that always feels good as well.
You know what I think is pretty impressive also? Let's say you struggle throughout the whole tournament, but you still pick the team that ends up winning the national championship. That, the last 10 years, that's been a 1 in 68 chance.
Right.
So let's say you like completely blow up on your bracket, but the one team you think is going to win it all continues to and does win it all. That's pretty impressive. I had a year where literally – the only Final Four team I had that I picked correctly was the team I had, I think it was the year Michigan won it, and I had them winning the national championship. My bracket was awful. I was in last place in the pool I was playing in, but I picked the national champion, and I was pretty proud of myself. That's a 1 in 68 chance of picking that team, and I picked it. So that year I was pretty proud of myself. So I think that's also pretty impressive. So take that to heart if your bracket's not looking too well after the first day and a half of the tournament. Which it very well could be.
Yeah, I busted in the first.
See,
so it doesn't matter.
Sean's busted. I came very close to being busted with Virginia being teetering on the edge there, like I said. But thankfully, I'm treading water nicely. You know, water is up to my chest, just kind of floating along, having fun. That's where I'm at right now. Score update, told you about Oregon, Wisconsin. Buffalo now has a firm grasp on the throat of Arizona State. I'm sorry, Sean. with it being, I believe, 57-40 now. You just made a free throw. So it's 57-40. Still a fair amount of time. You could make a comeback. Just under 14 and a half minutes.
Down 17. I mean,
yeah, you never know. But Nevada teams have made runs already this tournament to
that
bring it
true.
Back in. So you never know. But let's talk about some of the other matchups we already know we're going to get in the second round. Number one, Gonzaga did not come close at all to losing to Fairleigh Dickinson. They just ran away from it. And now they'll get to play number 9 Baylor, who had a strong showing against number 8 Syracuse, especially in the closing minutes of that game. Excuse me. And then we had kind of the first big upset, Murray State knocking off Marquette. They'll go up against number 4 Florida State. That'll be an interesting matchup. And then, of course, Michigan-Florida. How will Florida react to, I guess, some people call it an upset over Nevada, but how will they react to beating the Wolfpack and then going up against Michigan? That's going to be, I think, a real interesting game between those
two. Yeah, number 2 against 10, so that's an upset kind of game right there that we were just saying. So I personally think Michigan's going to take that game, but who knows? Because, you know, most people thought Nevada was going to take the game.
I picked Arizona State to beat Buffalo. I was kind of hoping you heard me talk to Ian about this right before we went to break. At a first four team usually has success. Over the last 8 or 9 years, they've been doing the first four. Every year, at least one of them has moved on to the second round. I think 4 out of the 9 years, one of them has made it to the Sweet 16. So, like I said, 2 of them had already lost yesterday, and poor North Dakota State has to play Duke in the opening round. Don't think they're going to be able to pull off any kind of 16-1 shocker there. So Arizona State was kind of the last option, and they're back. I mean, they're within 15. They're making some kind of run. We'll see what they can work out of it. But I don't think a first four team is going to be able to move on this year. I think unless Arizona State really kicks it into gear, this is going to be an odd year where there's no real success from any first four team.
Yeah, and it's more of a competitive year, it feels like, already, if you kind of look at how the games have been going lately. There isn't really, I mean, there is Gonzaga, however you want to say it, or Duke, or, you know, these number one teams that we all, you know, okay, those are probably going to be the teams that make it, but still you're kind of like, these games are closer than normal. You know, maybe there's the 15, you know, point deficit, but a lot of the final scores have been, you know, 5 to 10 points. The difference of that is hasn't been much.
Yeah, oddly enough, no overtime games yet. I feel like between the first four and at least the first day of the official tournament, we usually get at least one overtime game. We're about 3/4 of the way through the first round, and we've had a couple games get close, but no official overtime games yet, which I feel like is pretty surprising.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it has been really, really exciting, especially that game against Wofford and Seton Hall yesterday. I don't know how many people caught that, but that game was back and forth. It was gritty, especially about right around the 10-minute mark to about the 4-minute mark of the second half. It was just bumping bodies and going into each other. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch that game. And just checked the Duke North Dakota State line for the game. Duke's favored by 26.5 points. I was just curious because I, and like I said, I don't expect North Dakota State to pull off any kind of a shocker, but I was like, I wonder what Duke is favored by. That's 26.5 points.
Of course.
That's yeah, that's gonna get ugly. Let's talk about the other number one seed that has yet to play, North Carolina against Iona. And it'll be interesting to see since the ACC conference has the top three seeds in the tournament. And let that sink in, that one conference has provided the top three seeds in one year's tournament. With Duke and North Carolina still having to play, it was an interesting benchmark set by Virginia. I feel like if Duke and North Carolina can both come out there and just slam these two 16 seeds like Gonzaga did, Virginia, again, looking like that number one seed, that's odd team out. And it'll be very interesting to see how that program gets shaken up if they end up being the first number one seed to be eliminated, because this could be a year, and we haven't seen it a whole lot, where four number one seeds make the Final Four. But this could be a year where looking at these four teams, it could be an all number one seed year. You agree with that?
I agree with that.
All right.
I do have a question for you, Spencer.
Go for it. Fire one off.
What do you think's going to happen with the Washington-Utah State game, the 9 and 8 seeds?
Very interesting. I'm happy you brought that up. Happy you brought that up, because Utah State being the other Mountain West representative in the tournament going up against a tough Pac-12 team. So they also got a draw against a Power 5 conference team. And Washington, kind of like Florida, didn't necessarily produce as well. I mean, Washington, I think, was more heavily favored to win the Pac-12 than Florida was to win the SEC. But both of those teams kind of underperformed in their conference tournament. So I feel like that was kind of the energy that Florida came into Nevada with. And I feel like that's also the kind of energy Washington could come in against Utah State with. A Power 5 team that wants to make a statement against, let's face it, a very talented Utah State team. They were able to get a win over Nevada at their home floor, and regardless of where they played them, that's still a tough thing to do this season, as we discussed. So, I mean, I picked Utah State in my round by round because I felt like Washington wasn't going to have enough juice to make it all the way, because I feel like they were a little exposed in the Pac-12 championship tournament. But that being said, I could see Utah exploding for the win and coming back and making it a game, but I feel like the edge does slightly go to Utah State.
It's going to be a close game. You know, both of them have relatively similar stats throughout the year, 28-6 for Utah State and 26-8 for Washington. It's going to be a tough game, and this is one of those 9-8 seeds mm-hmm. where I personally believe it's going to be one of those back-and-forth kind of games until the final seconds, where I believe Utah State will come victorious by 1 to 3 points. That's as far as I see them going, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so far, 2 9-8 games have occurred, and the number 9 seed has won both of them, with Baylor beating Syracuse and Oklahoma crushing Ole Miss earlier today. And then UCF-VCU will be the last 9-8 game to go off. UCF favored by just a point in that game, so we'll see how that goes. Oh, my gosh, my voice just cracked again.
Little boy Spencer.
Yeah, I can't believe it, man. It's been like years since it's done that, and it's happened twice now in the same show. It's very depressing. Utah State's 3.5 point favorite over Washington. I think it will be a close game in that sense, but I just feel like there's going to be a slight edge to Utah State for that one. It'll be interesting. 9 versus 8, I just flip a coin every year. Like, all right, let's see who might win this one. And so far, 2 for 2 on the coin flips. So there you go. There you go. But let's talk about the number 2 seeds right now, because Michigan, like I said, it could be a year where the number 1 seeds make it, but the number 2 seeds with Michigan, Michigan State, Tennessee, and Kentucky, very strong showing from 2 seeds so far. All 4 of them making it through to the second round. None of them really that tested. Tennessee won by 7 over Colgate, but they really pulled it back to within 7 in the waning seconds there of that game. So Tennessee and Kentucky, Very strong showings out of the SEC. The state of Michigan, basically with Michigan and Michigan State holding down the left side of the bracket at that spot. I could see this being a case where the number two seeds getting down to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, really flex their muscle over these number one seeds. And I think you could easily see an all number two Final Four, just as you might see an all number one Final Four. Out of those four teams, Sean, which one of those do you feel like you have the most confidence in?
Out of the number twos,
Michigan, Michigan State, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Which ones? Because they've all
Michigan.
That's not a bad choice at all.
No, I personally believe Michigan's probably going to go the furthest. Probably make it up to the Final Four at least. If we're looking at number ones, I'm looking at Duke, of course. But it is really tough between these ones and twos this year. I'm saying it's Michigan, and watch, Michigan doesn't even make it out of the Florida game. So, you know, that's just my luck in general. I'll say something, and then something else is going to happen. I don't know.
So the bracket, before we go to break, let's talk about the national champions that we've picked. If you go on to the website, you can see if Zion stays healthy, I think it's Duke's to lose.
Duke's to lose, huh?
Yeah, I think it's right now it's that championship is sitting with the Blue Devils. If they keep Zion healthy, him and RJ Barrett and those guys just continue to play as well as they are under Coach K. I mean, I think Duke is who I picked to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. Duke is, as long as he's healthy, that's the key. Yeah. If he isn't healthy, they'll keep it close, but I don't think they come out with a victory. But like I said, I personally believe Duke is going to take the whole.
And hats off to Zion as well for coming back and playing. He had a lot of professional NBA players telling him to think about his future and not play the rest of the season, just go to the NBA draft. But I feel like from the character that Zion has shown this season, that's not how he's going to conduct himself. I feel like he has too much respect for Coach K and the program he chose to come play for to do that. And hats off to Zion for getting out there as soon as this coaching staff would let him and just continue. I mean, as soon as he stepped on the floor in the ACC tournament, things changed dramatically. I mean, that tournament was wide open, and when Zion came back, it was Duke or North Carolina. Who's going to win?
Honestly, when Zion first hit the floor, I didn't even think I was watching a college basketball game.
No, he looks like a 40-year-old man.
I mean,
he's huge. He's a massive
ridiculous
dude. But I would say we're both agreeing that I think it's Duke's the favorite, but like Sean pointed out, it's been an incredibly competitive year so far with a lot of these matchups, so it's going to be a lot of fun to see where everything ends up. When we come back, of course, we'll give you another score update on some of the March Madness games going on right now, and then we'll talk about open wheel racing with F1 underway, and then IndyCar getting ready for their round two, and some more UFC fighting from Nashville this weekend. We'll talk about that after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Alrighty, welcome back. Buffalo still firmly ahead of Arizona State, 74-49. Wisconsin up 28-27 on Oregon just into the second half, a little over 90 seconds into the second half. Only two games going on. Next game doesn't start till about 3:50, 4 o'clock with Utah State and Washington. We'll kick off the afternoon portion of the final day, second and final day of the first round before the round of 32 gets started tomorrow, which is a lot of fun. But let's also talk some open wheel racing. Formula One's first round in the books. After racing in Melbourne, Australia, which is always a beautiful place to start the year. Great weather there in Albert Park. And what a showing. I mean, Mercedes dominated the race, which you kind of felt was going to happen because they just do that now. The last 5 years, they've won the Constructors' Championship, which is just their way of calling it the team championship. But they've won that 5 years in a row, and they've had a driver win the Drivers' Championship 5 years in a row, with Lewis Hamilton winning four and Nico Rosberg winning one of them. But it wasn't Hamilton that was out in front this race. His teammate, Valtteri Bottas, flew ahead of the rest of the field. I think he won by a total of about 22 or 23 seconds over second place. Wow. So his teammate, Lewis Hamilton, the defending world champion, finished 23 seconds behind his teammate in the first race. Don't know where that speed. I mean, Bottas really had two wins stolen from him last year. One in Azerbaijan when he ran over a piece of debris after a restart, which would be absolutely inexcusable from a circuit staff. If you have a safety car out there, which is their way of calling it a caution, the track staff should absolutely have the chance to clear that track completely before racing resumes. So how he got robbed of that last year is completely unfair. And then, of course, in Russia, late in the season, he was told to move over for his teammate Lewis Hamilton, who was way more in the championship chase than Bottas was. So you felt for Valtteri last season. You wanted him to get those wins, but he opens up the season just letting out all of that anger from last year and getting a huge win. He also got an extra point from the fastest lap, which is a new thing Formula One is doing this year. And I love the idea. Basically, if you drive the fastest lap during the race and you finish in the top 10 positions, which is the scoring positions, you and your team get an extra point. But I love the twist there that you have to finish in the top 10. Otherwise, like if you finish in 11th, no one gets that point, which I think can really throw a wrench into the whole thing. I mean, that's 21 extra points up for grabs. That's an extra second or so place finish, which could be huge for any championship race. But Bottas got the maximum 26 points from that. Mercedes got the maximum 44 points as a team, both firmly ahead of their two championship races. Ferrari were completely gone. Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc, I believe, finished either 4th and 5th or 5th and 6th, but they were so far back from Mercedes that it wasn't even funny, really. It was outright shocking by how much Ferrari was lacking in speed. But then, of course, IndyCar gets set for their round 2 of the season as they get ready to start their first ever race at the Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. That should be a lot of fun. Then, of course, UFC Fight Night from Nashville. Stephen Thompson, Anthony Pettis, the main event, should be a lot of fun between those two welterweights. And, I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun weekend, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. Enjoy it. Enjoy the basketball. And be safe out there.
Oregon's up 35-33.
Here we go. Enjoy all the basketball, folks. It's March Madness. It's the best time of the year. Be safe out there. And have fun. Peace.